And now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello and welcome to Shout Out. I'm Andy Shilton, and for today, for our World AIDS Day special,
I'm Aled Osborne, and yes, it is a special show where we will be talking and Betty...
About Betty.
I'm just reading the script.
She'll be giving us her personal story about being a woman living with HIV.
Plus, Eli will be joining us live in the studio.
And he's going to be talking about what things are like now it's 2019.
And, of course, the Just Like Us team will be reporting too.
All coming today right here on Shout Out.
Dance there, Steph.
I know, right? Check those hips out, dear.
I did.
So, hello, everyone. How are we all?
Hello.
I can't believe it's been a month since I've been on air.
Yay. Oh, sorry, that's the wrong response, isn't it?
Hello, Andy. How are you?
Hi, very well. Thank you. How are you? We've missed you.
I know. I'm really sorry. I had that dreaded flu thing that went round, and it really, really knocked me out for weeks.
So he says.
My voice is just about back, but even yesterday, I'm like, I can sound stupid on the radio. Oh, no, that's always the same thing, but you know what I mean. And he still wouldn't come back, but yeah, there we go. Well, anyway, hello. I don't think we presented together before, have we? You've been here as a guest, but we're not.
Yeah, this time last year with Polly.
Yes, that's right.
It has been like an annual anniversary.
Yeah.
Congratulations,
Polly,
by the way.
In ages. I assume she's all right. Are you still in touch with her?
Yeah, still in touch with Polly. She's lovely. She now works for a domestic violence charity, and she seems to be doing all the things, and she's really, really well.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
No, it's a special show today, isn't it? Because we're talking, it's a certain anniversary. Well, it's not an anniversary, is it? It's a certain event coming up.
Annual calendar event, yes. Yeah. So it is World AIDS Day coming up on the 1st of December. So at this moment in time, we are in the middle of National HIV Testing Week to promote everybody getting tested and knowing their status. And then next Sunday will be the 1st of December. So that's when we celebrate World AIDS Day.
Mm. Cool. I did one of them home testing kits.
They're really quick.
They are. I just get the blood out my finger. I didn't like. It's really difficult.
Yeah, that one's hard.
Yeah,
but you have to like. I think the instructions say to milk your finger, which just like,
milk.
Yeah. Well, they also say to prick the end of your finger.
Oh, all these words.
Not right.
I thought home was going to be homo. Now you're pricking your finger.
Are you done?
Pushing the milking.
No, okay. That's what I was saying.
Steph quietly in the corner.
Anyway, well, I say that. We can't even talk. Well, we've got a really packed show, so we ought to really. Do you want to introduce this one? Because it's my favourite. It's bizarre.
Oh, it's a lovely piece, this one. Yes, so we're going to be hearing from two people that are living with HIV on tonight's show. And the first one is a client and a volunteer of Brigstow. Her name is Betty, and it is a personal story from a woman living with HIV.
My Five on Shout Out.
My journey to recovery is testimony to the vital role science has played in it. I am HIV positive. I always thought it could never happen to me. The common understanding was it didn't happen to people like me, who are well educated, had a good family background, solid job, never had been a philanderer. So how? Relatives and friends and co-workers, too many to count, had succumbed to the sickness. I can't recall the numerous number of funerals I had attended, and still I was in self-denial. So when I started feeling extremely tired, sleeping during office hours, not wanting to work, I began to worry. But I had to keep on working because I was a boss. I had a staff under me whom I had to supervise. And one day when I saw a photograph that was taken of me, I was aghast. I had lost so much weight. Then my father stopped by to see me and found me sleeping. I had not worked for 2 days. He insisted on taking me to his doctor. They did tests, but they didn't tell me that they were doing an HIV test. I will never forget the look on that doctor's face. She stared at me with a look of disdain, disgustuous, judgmental, accusatory. She actually, oh, it was bad. Sadly, many clinicians today still do this out of ignorance, and the stigma is what is preventing people from getting tested. Without preparing me, she just blurted out those words, "You are HIV positive. Go and get yourself treated." I wanted to tell her it was a mistake, to say, "Please repeat the test," but she turned away and left me just like that. I was alone. The words "alone" and "frightened," "today it's me, tomorrow someone else," came to me from a song by a renowned singer who declared to the world he was HIV positive and faced stigma to his dying day. I was afraid to tell my father, so I went to my gynecologist. I felt dread. Was I going to die? But he reassured me. He said no, that being HIV positive wasn't a death sentence. It was 2002, not 1980. And there were drugs now, good drugs, and that if I had a healthy diet, I would recover, and directed me to get proper diagnosis from a renowned regional diagnostic center, still at the forefront of HIV/AIDS research. I was alone and frightened. I had nobody to go with me. At the center, though, there was no contempt, only understanding. In a counseling room, they gave me information on how and what I should do if my results weren't either negative or positive. Mine were positive. I was immediately put on a line of drugs that were too strong for me. I became violently ill and I developed a skin rash. I returned and was referred to a hematologist who stopped the drugs, and he told me that my CD4 count was not dangerously low, so as to start on antiretrovirals, because these would be for life once I started. Instead, he gave me vitamin supplements and blood tonics to boost my red blood cells, and I was put on a monthly monitoring to check my blood count. It was 2008 when I became ill, but didn't know that my immune system was being further compromised by breast cancer, which would be later diagnosed in 2009. I would have diarrhea, vomiting, skin rashes, and my drugs were switched twice before I settled. Back in the day, one of the drugs was Calitra. It had to be refrigerated. It was a challenge hiding this one in the family fridge, and it caused me much anxiety trying to disguise it from my colleagues while on the road trips that we used to make to remote locations, carrying ice packs and chilling them on the windowsills at night where there was no fridges. I would lie and make up my health conditions to explain them away, removing the labels from the containers. The high level of HIV awareness also caused an acute level of stigma in my country. You simply didn't mention it, and you hid your status. And if you're a high-profile person, you hid even more. Then there was my family, my father, my siblings. The latter were so accusatory and judgmental and totally unsupportive. They said that I'd brought shame to the family. It stings still to this day when I remember those words. My father, all he said was, "Eat well to gain weight," because HIV/AIDS is synonymous with weight loss and people will gossip. I was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2009, and the consultant at the time said I was his first patient to be both HIV positive and have breast cancer. He said it like it was some badge of honor. 7 months on chemo and a further 6 months on another drug called Herceptin, they all compromised my immune system, and the breast implant compounded it, and it had to be removed. CD4 counts were fluctuating, but luckily there was no drug resistance and the viral load levels remained undetectable. Thanks to the advances in science today, I am one of the many who can actually say I am U equals U. My viral load is undetectable and therefore the virus in me is untransmittable. I am testimony to the crucial role science has played in my road to recovery. The development of new lines of antiretroviral drugs has benefited me and countless others. Today, I'm on 2 drugs a day, down from the 3 I started off with 11 years ago. But stigma still prevails. It holds me and others bound to a self-imposed non-disclosure agreement. We fear to disclose simply because of all fears of rejection. Seeing judgment across people's faces, people that remember the 80s and 90s tombstone advertisements that proclaimed HIV to be a death sentence. We want to be accepted, not judged, and certainly not rejected. I once saw a nurse double glove herself before she touched me, reinforcing my self-stigmatization. Stigma has put HIV in the closet far too long. We must educate to get rid of it. It takes a lot of caring to get an HIV-positive person to love themselves again. That's why they need peer mentors and charities like Brigstow. That's why I volunteer with them. But I am still a work in progress. But I thank my God I'm not where I used to be. HIV is not selective. Today it's me, tomorrow it's someone else. Go get tested. Please go get tested and learn your status to protect yourself and survive to tell the story.
If you have a story you could tell in 5 minutes, get in contact. Visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt. Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out podcast.
And you were saying that was that's a remix of the original. That's yes. Waterfalls. That's by Postmodern Jukebox, that version.
So the original was by TLC.
Amazing song. I used to love that when I was a kid.
It's an incredible song, but it was actually the first number one song ever to reference AIDS in one of its verses.
Gosh.
And the video to that song as well is incredible. It's amazing.
Lovely. So I do like the PMJ version too.
It's have incredible remixes. Yeah. As remixes go, I'm not usually au fait with a remix. No. I'm like, don't touch it. Like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But PMJ do good.
They
ones.
Do really yeah. good, don't yeah. they? So we were very lucky as well when Ivan was part of the team. We managed to interview some of them too. Oh. It was great to get to talk to them. So.
Nice.
Anyway, we have a news team in here.
Hello.
One and a half.
Who's the half?
I don't know.
I'm one and a half anyway. Pam's gonna be the half. I've got to lose weight for Christmas. I'll be able to squeeze into my rubber t-shirt and look like a black pudding.
Weirdly, me too, Terry. Me too.
It's definitely the other way at Christmas. You put on the weight because it's winter. You've got to stay warm.
That is true.
Anyway, let's get some news headlines.
This is Shout Out News on Thursday the 21st of November.
There is a sizable LGBTQ gothic scene, gothic music and culture, which developed out of the punk rock and DIY music explosions of the late 1970s, has a considerable crossover with queer scenes. Goths are often criticised by religious extremists, have gender-questioning clothing, and celebrate being in a vibrant subculture. Like LGBTQ people, they can even be the subject of hate crime, and following the death of Sophie Lancaster, a young female goth murdered by savage heterosexual youths in 2007, much more awareness of the need for subcultural groups to unite against hatred became apparent. If you are a goth, then one of the subculture media institutions has put out an appeal for support. Sanctuary Radio has been on the internet since 1995 and was one of the first media outlets to stream continually over the early web. Today it runs two services, one concentrating on darkwave, electro-goth and true gothic music, and the other on 1980s alternative music. But like all grassroots media, the station costs money to operate, around $220 a day. The station says that it needs to raise some $2,000 to keep going. If you have cash to spare, nip along to sanctuaryradio.com for details on how to donate. Alternatively, you can help the station via Amazon when buying any of your favourite goth rock tracks.
Now, LGBTQ newswire Pink News reported that the latest straight pride fiasco down in Texas saw a grand total of, wait for it, two heterosexual supremacists attempt to march after even the promoter of the hate group, which does have links to racist and anti-Jewish Nazi groups, failing to show. The event organisers claimed that heterosexual and cisgender people in the United States are an oppressed majority, although no factual evidence has been supplied to support this assertion. A lively counter-demonstration of some 200 people, led by local transgender charities, dwarfed the two men, which local media described as the usual sorts of inadequate that show up at far right-wing events. One of the males attempted to shout anti-trans slogans at the counter-protesters, but was drowned out with gales of laughter. The two men left the area shortly afterwards. Now, Pink News added that their reporters had made an effort to ascertain why even the promoter of Straight Pride had failed to show to their own event, but they had no avail. One gay man, writing on an LGBT comments page, remarked that Straight Pride was so silly that not even its own organiser could be bothered to show up.
Le Gâteau Chocolat is a name to conjure with on the gay cabaret scene. A proud larger cutie pop and gender fluid star, Chocolat has been a star in both Gay Times and Attitude magazine in the last year. More than just a drag act, Chocolat has exposed issues such as Black British identity and battles with depression. Le Gâteau, who prefers male pronouns, has won several awards and early appearances at festivals such as Liverpool's Homotopia, and has seen him expand into the mainstream performance arts theatres around the UK. On Saturday night, Le Gâteau appeared on the Late Night Comedy Showcase on digital TV network Quest and showcased his incredible vocal range and operatic talent that sees him mix high and popular art forms in much the same way as legendary Klaus Nomi in the early 1980s. The Smart Parade, a popular arts podcast, met up with Le Gâteau Chocolat earlier this year and learned that he is a fan of the Wizarding World of Harry Potter and discussed with him new African Caribbean cinema.
Now, congratulations to Dyking Out, which has made its 100th podcast. It's a well-produced podcast and hosted each week by Carolyn Bergier, Sarah York and Ceci Bergier. It's uploaded regularly around once a week with an hour or more of lesbian news and information and gossip. The podcast is also affirming of non-cisgender identities and is much recommended. So you can stream the podcast at dykingout.com, tune in and enjoy, and congratulations to them.
Vegan and animal welfare campaign group Animal Aid has been in touch with their supporters. With the festive season rapidly approaching, it's time to get organised for an ethical and cruelty-free Christmas. And with a considerable number of LGBTQ people taking an interest in animal rights and veganism, the Animal Aid Festive Fair will be of great interest to many gay, trans and non-binary folks. The Animal Aid Christmas Festival takes place at Kensington Town Hall on Sunday the 8th of December from 10 till 4. More than 100 stalls will represent animal welfare groups, activism on the environment, and plenty of opportunities for purchasing supplies for the winter to come. Needless to say, there will be plenty of Christmas stocking fillers. Information on how to get to Kensington Town Hall is at animalaid.org.uk.
And finally, a respected and experienced Roman Catholic priest who ministers to many Irish celebrities and people in the media, and who is outspoken in his progressive views on theology, has argued that it is high time that the Roman Catholic Church recognise that many women would make excellent priests. Father Brian D'Arcy was talking to the Irish World newspaper, a community weekly publication which serves the Irish population in Britain. Father D'Arcy has been a priest for nearly 50 years and has developed a close working relationship with Irish singers and musicians and broadcasters. Father D'Arcy said that many men join the priesthood were running away from real life. He proposed that allowing women to join the clergy within Catholicism would change this dynamic and could help the struggling church reclaim its authority in Ireland.
For these news stories and more, check out our website at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
For Shoutout News, this has been Terry Starr
and Hans Peregrin.
Shoutout News,
national and international LGBT news for you.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
That's the vowel. The vowel.
I'll have a vowel, please, Carol.
Oh, you can tell I've been on the radio for a while. That's by Ruth Ann. Clearly. As well. It's a lovely song, that one. So.
Hiya. Hello. What am I doing? What are we doing now?
We're talking to Eli, aren't
we? Oh, yes. Hello, Eli.
Hello.
Welcome to Shout Out.
Are you going to...
I don't know what to say.
How are you?
I'm good. How's everyone?
Yeah, good.
So now you come in to talk to us, obviously, because the whole part of the show is we're talking about World AIDS Day and HIV and the like. And do you want to explain to the listeners kind of your current state of affairs?
I think right now, like HIV in like 2019, it's kind of chill in a sense of like medication's okay. For me, at least, like, I can just take my medication and it's all just, like, okay. Because we've got U equals U and undetectable equals untransmittable. So
taking it back a step, we should explain, you're in your early 20s?
20.
Oh, yeah. Right, so 20, very...
Just the earliest 20s. Of 20s.
Yeah, like, baby.
And you are HIV positive. And one of the things we want to talk to you about is what it's like today living with it. You know, I mean... does it become a real chore and the like, or is it really that a lot simpler these days than we think?
I think it depends on the day. Like, some days you can go days where you don't even think about it because it just, like, yeah, I'm HIV positive, but also I'm so many other things and I do so many other things that why would it be at the forefront of my mind? Mm. But then on other days, like, especially when you have to go to hospital, it's at the very forefront of your mind. And it's like, oh, I do have to do this one thing that can be quite burdensome, but also just kind of isn't. It's just a thing that you have to deal with. And I guess for other people, it might be different. But for me, I don't see it as this massive issue. But I think if I need help with other things... So, like, if I were to go to the doctors and I was like, oh, I have a cold, their instant reaction would be, oh, have you gone to your sexual health clinic? Because they're going to help you more than we can. And I'm like...
Really?
Yeah, they just... Because there's that, like, fear that doctors often have and medical people can have.
Yeah, they worry at times whether any medication that they're going to prescribe is going to interact with any medication that is for your HIV. So... There are times where, depending on the GP that you have, they will put you back to your HIV clinic because they don't want to kind of meddle.
Shouldn't they know, though? Mm. They're GPs. Surely they should know what drugs can be mixed with.
Well, like, even if they don't know, there are tools there that they can access. So, you know, you've got the BNF. Which is a formulary for doctors, which will say drugs, and in that it will state interactions. But you've also got the Liverpool drug app as well, which is like a website and an app that you can put like any type of drug, whether it's leisurely, recreational, homeopathic, or like a pharmaceutical drug, and it will literally tell you every interaction that has with every single HIV medication.
Right. So they have actually done some testing on that. That's quite good. So is it, I remember when I was a lot younger and some of my friends got diagnosed with HIV, they used to have to take lots and lots of tablets. It's now got quite simple, hasn't it? Are we down to one tablet a day, or is it still two or three, or does it depend on who you are and what your status is? Or
I think it depends on the person. I'm on three just because I find that convenient and I have less side effects with three.
Right.
But friends of mine are on one.
I'm on one.
Alan's on one. And it's like, I think it's just side effects. Like, I find it so much easier to take individual ones.
I mean, because the reason I ask is because it has got an awful lot better. We know that we can successfully manage it and people can live a long, healthy life, etc. But there's also kind of been this swing that means I don't really need to worry either. But it's not as rosy as that, is it? You know, it still come with its complications? I mean, I seem to remember talking to you. You do have reactions at first, don't you?
Yeah,
you have to...
like, you can have the drug interactions, but I think, like, speaking on, like, for my behalf... Yes, we're not... People diagnosed nowadays aren't dying physically, but that's not meaning to say that kind of either emotionally or socially we're not dying.
Yeah.
Even though like medical advancements have come on so far, there are times where societal attitudes are still very much stagnant into what they were in the 80s and the 90s. So just because people living with HIV aren't dying anymore doesn't mean to say that our story or our struggles are any less.
No, that wasn't really what I was talking about.
And devalued. About... So, like, I think we do still have the struggles at times. I think with meds at the beginning, depending on the person and the med that you're on, you can have certain interactions, but they are a lot nicer. Mm-hmm. That's that for me anyway. I don't know about Eli.
I agree, they are nicer.
So did you start with a single one and have more reaction to it initially then?
So I started with one, like, because I didn't take them for ages, but I started with one and then I went on to three because the one a day made me feel really ill,
right?
And then they sort of with combination, because it's just combination, one day a pill. The pills are just like combinations of pills.
Yeah, so
then
so they it's just work your out. Yeah. Three meds, but instead of it being in three separate tablets, it's just in one.
Yeah.
And because there's different like categories of medications, you can kind of split out which part might make you be feeling a certain way.
Right. Yeah.
And it just so happened to be that if I took them individually, I'd feel a lot less sort of sick and nauseous all the time.
And there's like 26 different type of drug regimens that HIV positive people can be on nowadays. So even if you have
If you're up to one, there are plenty of other things that they can do.
If you've got really adverse side effects, then they can change it around. And most clinic teams, I know in Bristol, like the clinic team that we have, are really, really good. So they will listen to your concerns. And if you have got any concerns about the meds and any interactions or side effects that you may be feeling, then they will listen and they'll take that on board. But just because, you've got options now, which may not have been there in the past either.
You mentioned like and it does unfortunately sound like a stigma thing with the doctors and like, but have you had other times where there've been other issues, like does it cause complications if you end up in hospital for certain things, or you know, if you're wanting to get pregnant and the like? There's some of the questions that people quite often ask around it. Does it affect any of that? Are there things you have to be aware of? Or
I think there's a lot of worry around it, like not necessarily access to care, but more just being afraid, the stigma of actually telling the person who could be caring for you. So like if I had to have an operation, there's always that fear that, oh, maybe I'll be put at the end of the waiting list because the surgeon won't like me because I'm HIV positive. Mm. Or double gloving is something I've experienced.
Yes, well, we heard that earlier as well.
Yeah. And I once had a simple nosebleed, and the amount of tissue I was given and the amount of gloves that the nurses wore to try and stop this nosebleed. And it was just, it was over the top. All I needed was like one tissue in my own hands to hold my own nose. Mm. It will stop bleeding.
Yeah. Now, of course, one of the big messages of modern time, which I think we broke on air first with yourself, probably over a year ago now.
Probably, yeah.
Is the whole message of you equals you,
mm-hmm.
Which has been the I want to say discovery. It's not really a discovery. It was the result of, you know, lots of checking and tests and the like, wasn't it? But it basically means if you have an undetectable,
undetectable
viral load, you cannot transmit.
And that's at this moment, that's only to sexual partners. And it does mean that HIV positive women will give birth, are able to give birth to their baby, and their baby would be born negative. And that's if the mother has access to treatment and takes her meds. But at this moment in time, we only know that it's with sexual partners. So say with breastfeeding, we're not 100% sure on that yet. But having an undetectable viral load does mean that you cannot transmit. So there's still some people out there that use iffy language, let's say, of like minimal risk and hardly no risk.
Mm-hmm.
Which is quite damaging because it still implies that there is a risk.
Mm.
But the guidance now and the guidelines are specifically saying zero, none, like it's fine.
Yeah,
yeah,
which is brilliant. It's such a long way. Yeah. We've come in, like, I mean, I'm 41, so 20 odd years.
Well, in 30 years, I'd say, is when, like, last year was the 30th anniversary of World AIDS Day, and in that time, in 30 years, what the kind of the field of HIV and how that has changed has been kind of incredible, really, and has moved on at such a, at times, like, supersonic rate, I'd say. But like I said, it is just those kind of attitudes at time that need to kind of catch up with the medicine and the science.
They are terrible and, still, aren't and, they? There's like, so much stigma.
It's just how people kind of refuse to believe the science. And it's like, you know, when it comes to U equals U, we've had like four major studies. In those studies, there was 125,000 plus acts of sex between a positive partner and a negative partner, and in all of them there was not one link transmission between the partners. And I think the number is about 9 people were diagnosed with HIV in those studies, but then they managed to do like a DNA test on the HIV to see if it was the same DNA match as the HIV of their positive partner, and they found out that it wasn't.
And then the partner went, "How dare you?"
So yeah, the science is there and it is believable. And for people like us, U equals U, well, for me it just means that I'm not going to die, I'm going to live, and I'm not going to pass it on. Eli, how does it mean to you?
Just adds like an aspect of freedom.
Yeah.
To be able to do what I want in life and to be like, here is a load of science that backs up that I'm fine and I'm normal, and normal in quotation marks because, you know, whatever. But like, I can achieve anything anybody else can achieve, and U equals U just backs it up. But at the same time, I do think U equals U kind of remains in this bubble within the HIV sector.
Yes, very much so.
And it hasn't gone out there. So when I go up to people and I'm like, "Have you heard of U equals U?" They're always like, "Huh? What are you on about?" And I'm like, "Okay, so you got undetectable equals untransmissible, and then this means this, and this means this, and this means this." And they're like, "Oh, okay, that's cool." But I feel like for me, it's a lot of freedom, but also it means I have to do a lot of explaining.
Cool. Well, listen, it's been lovely to talk to you. It's nice to get a young opinion on it too.
Like, so. I think at times during World AIDS Day, we focus on so much what has happened with our diagnosis, and we can't forget it, and it helps us to move forward. But I think at times hearing from somebody with the younger voice helps us to drive the
message.
We're
really old, aren't we, mate?
I am.
Yeah, Alan's the oldest.
Anyway, this has been lovely to talk to you, and we wish you the best. Stay with us. You're listening to Shout Out. Back in a minute.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Just like us, for LGBT young people.
Hello, Sarah.
Hey, James. That
A little ditty for the listeners.
How are you this month, James?
You know that tweet that just says everything keeps happening so much?
Oh, very that.
Very that at the moment.
Feeling it.
But we're vibing. We're vibing and keeping it tight. How are you? You're coming to me live from
Berlin.
From Berlin.
Yeah. It's the first time the podcast has gone international.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I'm enjoying it.
What are we talking about this month, Sarah?
Well, as the second week of November is Trans Awareness Week, we thought we'd talk a little bit about trans issues, but also we felt like we'd covered that a little bit in the past. So we're going to have a bit of a discussion of what it's like, really, like living under homophobia and transphobia in 2019. And we're going to hear from some JLU ambassadors. So yeah. I think it's going to be a great episode.
You're listening to Just Like Us, the monthly show for LGBT young people.
So yeah, like you said, young LGBT people tend to be pretty up to date on stuff like gender isn't binary and this is what pronouns are and stuff like that. But we did want to just kind of have a frank discussion about what it's like in 2019. So quickly before we started, we did just want to talk about like the fact that obviously we are both white, cisgender, gay people. So a lot of our experience is going to be like not universal. I mean, we're also, as we'll talk about, kind of surrounded by people who are very accepting of us. So we kind of wanted to have a discussion with each other. Hopefully there will be some stuff that people can relate to, but obviously what we're talking about is not going to be universal.
Yeah, so that's kind of part of why we're having this discussion. We were talking about how it would be great to talk about how living in a world where homophobia and transphobia are present can be really draining, obviously. So we've spoken a lot about self-care, I think, in the past, which is really important, but it's also okay and normal, I think, to feel down about just the fact that homophobia and transphobia exist and they kind of suck. And we've made huge strides already, but there is still a long way to go for things to be normalized fully. And I think part of what can be so difficult is that we have made huge strides, so it takes you almost by surprise.
Yeah, I think definitely is it's easier to get in a bubble on social media. It's notoriously easy to, obviously you only follow people who you agree with to a certain extent. So it can feel like the whole world is on your side. And, we can get married now and it's technically illegal in a lot of places to discriminate based on sexuality or gender. Mm-hmm. And as well, obviously we tend to be surrounded by circles of people who accept us. I'm not going to hang out with homophobes willingly.
That's only for Christmas.
Next month.
Yay.
So it's very easy to get into, this bubble of assuming everything's fine. And then suddenly you're oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's also this much bigger thing that you're part of. You forget, I think, there's dealing with homophobia when it's directed at you. And there's thinking about the concept of homophobia being so much bigger than you that it's difficult to imagine everything being perfect. And I think this sounds like we're being very cynical, but it's not that things aren't wonderful in many ways and a lot better than they were, but it's also just important, I think, to acknowledge those feelings and to kind of think about the fact that it can just be a bit rubbish. It can feel like feeling surrounded by that.
You're listening to Just Like Us, the monthly show for LGBT young people.
We're not going to talk about, self-care as a whole, but very briefly, I think that's why it's so great to have LGBT pals, because
definitely
those are the people who more than anyone else probably are going to understand why you might be feeling down about it or mm-hmm. might be feeling rubbish. I mean, other people can kind of understand conceptually I'm sure that must be, really tough, but without having had that fear, it's difficult to relate entirely.
Yeah, and you have the added emotional effort of you having to explain to a person that's never been through it why it's an issue. So you have to kind of do all the legwork until they can kind of give you some empathy on the topic, which I think can be really difficult.
I know before I had many LGBT friends, I was having to explain to my straight friends while I was still at school. I was and here's why this thing sucks and here's why that thing sucks. And it's when I came to uni and I made gay friends, I didn't have to, I could just, make jokes about it and just have myself understood. But even us talking about this, I mean, like we said, we're not coming from a kind of universal perspective. We're coming from quite a kind of privileged position within the LGBT community.
Definitely.
We get to live our daily lives and assume everybody is okay with us. And then suddenly somebody's I'm homophobic and it's, bad.
Yeah.
But there's some, I mean, a lot of trans people, every day they deal with people misgendering them and with,
100%.
I think we don't realize often enough how brave a lot of LGBT people are to just keep existing every day and to just
I know what you mean.
It's really impressive.
Because, like I said before, when I had my little anecdote of when you're walking down the street and someone suddenly says something, it's kind of, even if it's not directed at you, it's still horrible. But it's if you are someone who, if you're someone where it's kind of your transness or your LGBTness is visible all the time, it can be even more of a slog and even more of a difficult situation to go through, I think.
You're listening to Just Like Us, the monthly show for LGBT young people.
Keeping it light though, things are good and LGBT people are often happy.
And our LGBT ambassadors are here as proof of that in many ways. So we thought we would hear from some of them talking about their experiences.
So one of our ambassadors, Daniel, had this to say. For trans people in general, a lot of people are going to try and tell you what being a good trans person is, in quotes. Took me a while to understand how being trans can be anyway positive. But the most important gift you get is the opportunity to decide what your gender means for you. Don't listen to anyone trying to tell you that you must be blank to be blank, because you need to decide that for yourself. For example, my situation on what being a man is, some men take for granted, but as a trans dude, you have to face up to it and choose your destiny. I think that's really lovely. Thank you, Daniel. That sounded sarcastic, but I meant it.
Genuine. Here's a little bit from Romano and his experiences. Something I wish I had known about being trans earlier is that you don't have to reach any expectations of what you want changing on your body. I used to think that you were only trans if you were uncomfortable enough to have a certain number of things changed through surgery, and this always used to put me off identifying as male, as that felt way too intrusive. Now I'm more educated and have been living as a trans man for nearly 2 years publicly, I understand that this isn't the case, and that some trans people don't even have surgery or hormones. I'll keep this short and sweet. There's no wrong way to transition. It's all about what the individual is comfortable with. That's lovely.
I like that. And I think both of those tied in with our message of like, both of those kind of talked about like how hard this stuff is, but also like there's very much like room for happiness and for like joy.
And and for feeling like satisfied with your situation. It doesn't mean you're always constantly unhappy.
Yeah. That's it from us this month. I'll see you next month, Sarah.
I'll see you next month, James.
Au revoir.
Bye.
You've been listening to Just Like Us, the monthly show for LGBT young people. The music was by Cristerium. We come into schools too. Young people, teachers and parents can find us at www.justlikeus.org.
For more information about Shoutout Radio, visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Shoutout.
LGBT radio for you.
There you go. That was JLU there. Can you write?
Yeah, can I just tell everyone that we're going to be halting the podcast for December. The only podcast that we will be broadcasting is the Bristol Kiki one. The rest of them are on hold.
Hang on. By podcast, you mean the little inserts?
The 7 minutes. Seven-minute ones,
Not our podcast. You'll still be able to get them.
Yes.
Yeah, you'll prank them if you do.
Our internal podcasts that we allow organisations to have our airtime for us. For themselves. JLU and My Umbrella will be sending best Christmas wishes on air, but there won't be full podcasts because we're obviously missing a show in December because the Christmas holiday.
Oh, yes.
We also have another one where we have our Christmas party live on air. So it means only two shows really for December. Yeah. So next week we're talking Trans Pride. That is happening this Saturday in Bristol. There's the march, which starts at College Green at 10:30 in the morning of the Saturday. And then they got the Community Day, which is at the station, Silver Street, right by Ujima. Mm-hmm. And that goes from 12 p.m. until 4. Then there's nighttime celebrations. Got Trans Femme Meet at 6 p.m. That's To the Moon, including performance by the Trans Pop-Up Choir. Non-binary meet at 6:30 at the Old Market Assembly. And a trans mask meet at 7 p.m. at the Bristol Bear Bar. So most of it's happening around the Old Market area. Old Market Assembly has also got the after party, which starts at 10 p.m. All good for Trans Pride then. I think this is the first year of a march, and Shout Out will be there. There's a few of us going down to do some interviews, which is what we'll be broadcasting next Thursday.
And Brigsdale have got a stall along with THT and Unity in the station, so if anybody wants to talk to us about kind of prep or testing or anything like that, then they can come to the station and grab either Brigsdale or THT.
Yes.
It's a wonderful venue, the station on Silver Street. It's really nice space. So
really, really nice.
Yeah, and they've got it's all the bigger now. They got rid of the fire tenders.
That's what it was, wasn't it, for many years?
Yeah. Fire station, right in the city centre. And they got rid of Temple as well. Not that, I mean, there must be, we're talking about that, and the tenuous link is that some firemen are gay. Just saying.
Thank
Eliza
for those ones that are. That's all I'm saying.
That's cool. Yeah.
Anyone in a uniform?
A fireman with a long hose.
Oh, no.
Very
adult. You can buy those calendars, can't you? Which actually do raise money for sort of like the firefighters' benevolence fund.
Raise and quite a lot of things.
And I think they do one for female firefighters as well.
Haven't they got like a firemen and kittens calendar as well?
Oh,
so it's like top topless, really attractive topless by a man holding a really cute little kitten. Sweet. I know, right?
Yeah, that's nice. A starter kit. Calendar in the starter kit.
I was going to say that is full on.
One of the things coming up in December is the gay starter kit.
That is full on.
LGBTQ starter kit.
Naked fireman holding a pussy.
Well, actually, in the starter kit.
That is catering for the gays, because gays love their cats.
Yes.
They do. Yeah, absolutely.
I think a lot of people like cats. I would say it's higher in gay people, would you?
There's a bit of a stereotype, isn't there?
Gays are pets in general, I think. Yeah. You get a part of the LGBTQI QIA plus family with a puppy or a kitten, and it is at a different level of love and spoilness.
Oh, haven't we got a program coming up next year? About gay animals?
Yes, we have. Yes.
Well, the actual animals are gay, or LGBTQ people with pets.
No, we're not talking about bestiality. We're on about animal on animal. Okay.
You have to misrepresent what I said. You have to misrepresent what I said.
But that's what you said, Terry. That's what reached my ears.
In that case, I didn't explain it well. We're talking about gay animals. We're talking about gay animals. Homosexual animals. That's it.
Yes. Matthew is going to be introducing. I think it's a zoologist, isn't it? It's someone who knows a lot about animals. Anyway,
but there's that story recently of those penguins, didn't they? They actually stole an egg because they wanted to like raise it as their own little like.
Did they steal it or were they given it? I thought they were given.
I
think they may have been given a second one, but the first one they definitely stole.
I bet those kids are going to be grounded.
But
that is pushing the gay agenda though quite far though, isn't it?
I like this. But of course, the higher up as a rule the intelligence spectrum you go in the animal kingdom, the more homosexuality there is. So I understand from reading.
But it has been observed in almost every animal on the planet.
So I understand, but the more intelligent the creature, such as dolphins, I know we've spoken about this before actually, dolphins do enjoy sex for pleasure.
Bonobos, which is our closest kind of relative.
Which you used to call the bisexual monkey, but they're not monkeys, they're apes.
And dinosaurs. Dinosaurs.
Oh, back onto dinosaurs.
No, we're not going there. There's not enough show left.
There's enough dinosaurs. And
luckily, Hans is
nowhere
near a microphone. What are you trying to say?
But I'm intrigued by the title of the. I think is it a book, Hans? T Rex turned me gay.
That's correct.
That's wonderful, isn't it? That's going to have to be in it.
Christmas
stocking filler.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Maybe I'll put it on order at Waterstones.
I literally can't wait for this gay starter pack. I'm so excited.
It has got rather full over the course of the last year.
When have we got them in, Terry?
I think it's the 5th of December now, isn't it? Yeah.
The 5th of December. So we'll be talking about the gay starter kit and where you can get it.
I should just provide running commentary, shouldn't I?
Should be here, definitely, Alan.
Oh, yeah. I dread to think what's in those starter packs.
Yeah. There's a lot of things we've discussed over there.
Batteries aren't included.
Sad. Anyway, that's it for this week. Don't forget, World AIDS Day is on the 1st of December, so please do remember that.
Yes, wear your ribbon. Thanks for letting me join you. I've been Alid Osborne. To catch the show again or find out more, head over to shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Let's speak, as we said, we're catching up with Trans Pride. So for myself, Alid, and the rest of the team, say bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye, everyone. Bye.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.